to Big Blue Hits on Giants.com, all fueled by Hess. I'm John Schmoke. We're joined today by Paul Dottino. Paul, are you ready for Giants and Packers on Sunday?
What do you think, John? It's great to be with you live instead of on tape for the preview report.
No doubt about it. Let's get to our Adorama news of the day. Adorama, the official electronics retailer of the New York Football Giants. And that's two Giants practicing today, one for the second straight day, Brandon Jacobs, and Jason Pierre-Paul hitting the practice field for the first time today as well.
Yeah, good news to see both of those guys in pads, John. The guys worked in shells today, by the way. The bad news is JPP is still not sure if he's going to play on Sunday. He said that he did pretty well today, felt better, but said, you know what, I still got a couple of days to go before the game, and it may come down to a game-time decision on Sunday morning as to whether or not he plays against the Packers. It looks like Jacobs may be medically okay to go, but that could be a numbers game. If the Giants want Michael Cox to return kickoffs, they may not be able to keep Jacobs on the roster. If Jernigan returns kickoffs again, maybe they can.
And let's take a look at the injury report. You will see both Brandon Jacobs and Jason Pierre-Paul being listed as questionable. Coy Webster is still out, battling a bunch of different leg injuries. The ankle seems to be the big problem right now. And, of course, Terrell Thomas and Bear Pascal Paul are going to go. So the Giants, really, in week number 10 here, they're pretty darn healthy.
For the most part, John, the injury curve has been going down for them in terms of numbers of guys who have been unable to practice. You know, it's funny. We talked about this during the Super Bowl season a couple of years ago, how they started getting healthier at the end of the season, and that was something that certainly helped them in the postseason. Whether or not it helps them this time, I don't know, but it's good for Tom Coughlin. He's got these guys on the field.
Well, at the very least for the Giants, Paul, if Jason Pierre-Paul can't go, they have a ready replacement in rookie DeMontre Moore. He's made some plays on special teams, and he hopes to see some time on defense as well.
I think I'm fully ready. You know, I like taking on the challenge, and I prepared hard. And I'm confident in the scheme, and the coaches have put me in the best situation so far. So I feel like I can go out there and, you know, make something happen.
Paul, how much do you think we can expect from DeMontre Moore, who really has only played a few snaps on defense, a couple of handfuls, mostly in a situational pass rush type of scenario? If they do need him, if JPP can't play, how will they utilize DeMontre Moore's skills?
I see Moore strictly as a situational pass rusher because right now he does not have the experience necessarily to read a run play off of a defense. And quite honestly, he is a pass rusher. That's what he did in college. He wasn't necessarily known as a great run stopper anyway. Now, you got to figure the Packers are going to go with a heavy dose of Eddie Lacy from the very get-go of this game. So if you're the Giants and you got to use DeMontre Moore in for some snaps, you're going to pick your spots where you pretty much know the Packers are going to throw.
And really, Paul, if there's been one strength of the Giants' defense this whole year, it has been their run defense.
Right.
Now, last week, you can argue it took a little bit of a step back. Rashad Jennings almost going for 100 yards, and they also lost Sean Rogers, one of their big run stuffers. So you have to be careful here not to shift too much towards the pass rush, risking that big strength stopping the run.
No question about that, John, because you're looking at a Packers team, because they're down to their third-string quarterback in Tolzien, you know they are going to emphasize the run first. They want to take the pressure off of this quarterback, if at all possible. So it's not just the fact that Sean Rogers is not there anymore, which could weaken the Giants' rushing defense a tad, but you know the Packers want to feature the run. So if you're the Giants, you have to think run first defensively.
No doubt about it. And the Giants are looking to run the ball first now as well on offense. Last week, Andre Brown, I talked to him for the pregame show on the radio. He said he was supposed to get only 12 carries last week. He ended up getting 30. And one of the reasons he got 30 is because Brandon Jacobs is battling that hamstring injury and that knee injury. That's the bigger problem here. He was not able to play. Now, he's practiced twice this week. He hopes to play. But that knee injury is something that he's going to have to manage.
When I hurt the hamstring, I stopped giving it the attention that it needed. But then that's what happened, which is why when I was done with the hamstring and coming back out, I was like, oh, wait, you know, my knee's puffing up. But, you know, I'm back to managing it and doing what I got to do every day. So it's going to be fine. I honestly believe that, you know, just with me managing and paying more attention to it, it's not going to come back.
And that brings us right to our first Twitter question of the show. This one from @Sosa2220. Paul, how will the Giants split their carries in the backfield this week?
All right, I think it does depend on whether or not Jacobs plays, John.
Because let's say he goes.
I think if he goes, it's maybe 16 to 17 carries for Andre Brown and maybe 8 to 10 carries for Brandon Jacobs. And maybe Hillis gets a couple. and that'll be your 30 carries for the game, which the Giants have been getting over the last three games during the win streak.
Will Hill still be the primary pass protection guy?
I'm not so sure that he will. He had a couple of problems in that Oakland game last week.
Missed one blitzer.
On a cut, he absolutely blew it. I think if Hillis plays with Brown and Jacobs is scratched, Hillis maybe gets five or six carries.
We have plenty more coming up on today's show. More questions from Twitter. We'll hear from Carl Banks as well. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Giants and the Packers. You're watching Big Blue Hits Live on Giants.com. We'll be right back.
This is an important message for all Giants fans attending the games at MetLife Stadium. In an effort to enhance public safety, a new NFL bag policy will be implemented this season. Guests are welcome to carry in clear bags, 12 inches by 6 by 12, or small purses and handbags that are 4.5 by 6.5 inches or less in size. Any non-clear bag exceeding the size limit, including camera or binocular cases, will not be permitted. The Giants appreciate your assistance and cooperation with the following policies. For more information, go to Giants.com.
Together we make the NFL Ticket Exchange the only place to buy and sell verified authentic NFL tickets, which means we make sure your name is on your ticket.
Enjoy the game, Gary.
Guaranteeing the day belongs to you. We make memories guaranteed with your name written all over them. NFL Ticket Exchange. Together, we make football.
We're back on Big Blue Hits Friday. I'm John Schmuck. We're with Paul Dottino, and Paul, the Giants, after an 0-6 start, are right back into the mix here. Let's take a look at the NFC East standings. The Giants only a game and a half back of the Dallas Cowboys, a game behind the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East. Paul, the Giants have three very important games coming up. Packers, Cowboys, Redskins.
Yeah, well, here's the good news, though. The Giants are in the middle of this little home stretch where they're going to be home for Green Bay and then home for Dallas before heading down to that Sunday night game against Washington. And I was talking to Victor Cruz the other day, and Victor said to me he does believe that they have gotten a little momentum here at home. Now, whether or not that carries much weight, I don't know, but he thinks that the guys have been a little more comfortable in their home building and perhaps playing with a lead gives them a little bit of a spark.
And the Giants certainly have gotten a spark from this three-game winning streak. However, they realize there's still a lot of work to do. Let's hear from Montreal and Cullen Jenkins, who really aren't that impressed with the Giants' three-game winning streak.
We're definitely a 3-6 team. We can't mistake that under any means, but our level of confidence is definitely rising each and every week. We've still yet to have played the game with all three phases of the game intact. So, we are 3-6, but, we're not worried about being 3-6. We're not worried about, winning the last three games. We're just worried about and focused on the week that's ahead of us.
We've got some positives here that, we're building. We've had, some wins, and we're able to build off of them and have a little momentum going for ourselves right now. So, still a long way to go to the point where, we would be right back or, to be able to say, okay, we're tied for the lead or anything like that. So, we can't get too anxious now because we're closer. We still have to just take it one week at a time.
Paul, I, for one, love the attitude the team showed this week. Nobody was overly happy with themselves. There was no premature celebration. They realized despite winning three straight, there's still a ton of work to do. And if this team does want to make a run at the playoffs, they have to play better football on the field.
Yeah, they need to be methodical about it, John. That's the only way to be. You get too happy with yourselves, and then all of a sudden what happens? You screw up a game, and then you're really out of it. I'll say one thing Cullen Jenkins said that wasn't on that tape. He said, as a defense over the last few weeks, we now go out there trying to shut people out, trying to make sure they don't score, period. As opposed to earlier in this season when their mentality was, we just want to contain people and keep ourselves in the game. And it's really shown now because they've only given up one defensive touchdown during this winning streak, and it came after a special teams fumble against the Raiders.
Yeah, in 3.5 games, the defense has been absolutely phenomenal. One area, however, the Giants do need to show some improvement is on offense in the passing game. Eli Manning knows they're still missing some opportunities out there.
There are opportunities there. We have plays. The execution is is good. It's just finishing them. It's just making, you know, making that catch, or making a little bit better throw, or, you know, making that one extra block. You know, little things that can be done. It's just more of our execution has to be a little bit better, and we should be able to score more touchdowns.
And that brings us to our next Twitter question, at Saraceno Paul. What needs to happen for the Giants' passing offense to finally get going? Eli Manning, they're talking about execution.
Well, you know what, John? We saw earlier in the year how guys were getting caught running the wrong routes. Specifically, Reuben Randle had a lot of trouble doing so. I just think that Eli and his receivers need to find more cohesiveness somehow. And that means not only, A, the offensive line giving Eli that extra second and a half to be able to look at his guys, but it also means the receivers being much more sharp and focused and deliberate in their routes. I will say this. They've scored 18 touchdowns this year as an offense. That's in the bottom five of the NFL. That is not enough. If they're going to make a run during the last half a dozen games or so, they need to get it to the end zone.
And Paul, only one touchdown in the past two games off of a lengthy offensive drive. Certainly, it must get better. And the play callers and the coaches, they're trying to help out Eli Manning. Kevin Gilbride has made adjustments to try to get this offense going.
I play every game out, you know, with the same thought, hey, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But as the game's unfolding, I'll adapt or modify what I'm doing based upon, you know, how's our defense doing, how are we doing, how are we protecting, you know, can we go back long enough to hold and throw the deep ball. So, you know, I kind of play it by ear based upon how the game's playing out.
And Paul, to me, this team has completely transformed. From a team the last 2 years that threw it down the field to set up the run, now they're a power run team that's going to set up the short pass, and only if the offensive line shows that they can protect Eli Manning will they try to take a lot of shots down the field.
You know what? They used to be an Earl Weaver kind of team where they'd go for the 3-1 homer all the time. Now they're going for line drives and doubles in the gap. And really, they had to do that by necessity because the running game earlier this year wasn't very good. The offensive line's pass protection wasn't very good. You've heard Kevin Gilbride talk about bringing things back just a little bit. It has been effective. The Giants have run the ball at least 30 times in each of the three wins during the streak, and they've also won the time of possession, which, of course, correlates to the running game. That's the way it's got to be for this team.
Not to mention cutting down on the turnovers, which obviously is a huge key to victory.
Well, what do they tell you? When you pass the ball, two bad things can happen, incompletes and picks.
No question about it, and the Giants have cut down on both of those. Plenty more coming up in today's show, but first, the Giants and Packers go back a long way in the NFL. A lot of championships, a lot of Super Bowls. Here are the 10 things you need to know about the Green Bay Packers and New York Giants rivalry.
Here are the top 10 things you need to know about the Giants-Packers rivalry. 10. The number of times the Giants have scored at least 50 points in a regular season game, including a 1986 win over the Packers by a score of 55-24 at Giants Stadium. The 55 points are tied for the third most in franchise history and are the third most the Packers have ever given up. 9. The number of games decided by 3 points or fewer when the Giants faced the Packers in the regular season. The Big Blue are 2-5-2 in such games, and just 13 points separate the all-time series, averaging out to a margin of victory of a quarter of a point over 51 contests. 8. Wide receiver Akiem Nicks has 8 plays of 25 yards or longer against the Packers, including 3 in the 2011 divisional playoff game. His 6 touchdowns and 423 receiving yards in just 4 games are the most by any Giant against Green Bay, including the postseason.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nicks makes the catch for the touchdown! He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary on the final play of the half!
7. The number of postseason meetings between the two franchises. The Giants trail 4-3, but have won the last two en route to Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46 titles. 6. The Giants' margin of victory over the Packers in the 1938 NFL Championship game, the 6th title game played in the history of the NFL. The Giants won 23-17 at the Polo Grounds to capture the 3rd of their 8 league championships in franchise history, trailing only Chicago's 9 and Green Bay's 13 in total titles. 5. The Giants trail the regular season series between the two historic franchises by 5 games. The Packers are 27-22-2 against the Giants, dating back to their first meeting in 1928, in which New York won 6-0. 4. The number of times the Giants have shut out the Packers, most recently in 1944. The others were meetings in 1928, 1932, and 1937. Three. Eli Manning has recorded three straight games with a 100-plus rating against the Packers and is 3-3 against the NFC rivals, including the postseason. In his last three games versus Green Bay, he's averaging more than 300 yards with 9 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. 2. The number of seasons Tom Coughlin spent as wide receivers coach of the Packers, serving in 1986 and 1987, before taking the same position in his first stint with the Giants. 1. In 58 total meetings over 85 years, there has only been one overtime game between the Giants and Packers. That was the NFC Championship game at Lambeau Field, where Lawrence Tynes kicked the game-winning field goal in the extra period to clinch a 23-20 victory and send New York to Super Bowl 42.
To kick the Giants to the Super Bowl. Snap is good. Kick on its way. End over end. Does it have the distance? It is
good!
Good! Lawrence Tynes has kicked the Giants to the Super Bowl!
That's some great information. The Giants and Packers have a long and storied rivalry, Paul. Goes back to a lot of playoff games, and from a lot of these matchups, the Giants are very familiar with one of the Packers' leaders on defense. That's their coordinator, Dom Capers. They faced him before, and the Packers, though, defensively this year, very mediocre in a lot of categories.
Yeah, well, Capers runs a 3-4, as we all know. Comes from a very, very heavy blitz background. I mean, that's why he's always done it, no matter where he's gone. Zone blitzing will be part of it. He'll be sending DBs, he'll be sending the safeties, corners, every different which way. They got 27 sacks so far this year.
But the one number that stands out to me, only 3 interceptions. They are not forcing any turnovers in the defensive end, which obviously is a very important thing for defenses to do. Offensive lineman Kevin Booth knows Dom Capers is going to have that Packers defense ready, and their scheme is going to be sound.
Their defensive staff and Coach Capers, he does a great job of kind of, you never know what's going to come out there in terms of personnel, and you know, they're a well-coached team that really accepts coaching, and they play their responsibilities very well.
And the one thing they do, Paul, you mentioned it, they blitz. They bring it from everywhere. They bring the linebackers. A.J. Hawk leads all inside linebackers with 3 sacks. Tremont Williams, a corner, has 2.5 coming off the edge. The Giants are really going to have to take a look pre-snap and know where everybody's coming from.
Yeah, very, very important. We talked about before the Giants passing game and Eli and those receivers needing to be on the same page. Very critical in Sunday's game. Williams is probably going to wind up sliding down against Victor Cruz in the slot, though, on Sunday. So that also is an interesting dynamic, because would they even attempt to blitz him when he's opposite Cruz in that formation? That's going to be a real game of cat and mouse in terms of Cruz having to pick up hot reads with Eli.
Now, Paul, their one really accomplished one-on-one pass rusher is Clay Matthews. He came back from a broken hand last week, but played with a gigantic club on his hand. Now, the apparatus is supposed to be smaller this week, but Kevin Gilbride knows regardless of what his hand's like, he's going to be relentless on every play.
I think it limited him, you know, what he could do, grabbing and, you know, pulling and doing some of the things that he uses to avoid being blocked, but you know, it's his speed as much as anything that makes him, and his spin move and all that other stuff that didn't impact at all. I'm sure it hurt him, but it's, you know, they say they're going to cut it down, unfortunately, and so we'll have to deal with him more at his best.
That brings us to our next Twitter question from @TheCNotes. Is Clay Matthews still, Paul, the biggest single individual threat on this Packers defense?
Well, I think based on what we've seen in the last month, Hawk is probably a bigger threat. He's playing very, very well. In fact, he was probably the best defensive player on the field against Philadelphia last week as I watched the tape. But I'll tell you this, John. If the Giants can get to the edges with Andre Brown, the Packers are giving up 6 yards a carry off of the edges. Their rush defense, when it's been good, has been between the guards.
And the reason it's been good between the guards is because of 3 mammoth defensive linemen.
Exactly.
Johnny Jolly, Ryan Pickett, B.J. Raji. These guys literally add up to a ton of defensive linemen. And boy, they can move too. They're pretty good athletes for their size.
Yeah, and we haven't even gotten to Thanksgiving yet. And those guys are big. I will tell you something, though, John. As far as I'm concerned, the Giants' power running game has finally started to get on track over the last few weeks. And I do believe that they've got enough to at least move the chains. Remember, it's not necessarily about running for 150 yards during the game. It's about when do you get those yards, and are you able to effectively chink and dink yourself down the field by moving the chains. You don't have to run for 35 yards on any given play.
And, Paul, with all these blitzes trying to stop the run, they put their cornerbacks into a lot of one-on-one, man-on-man situations. Sam Shields is a good corner. He can play. Jamon Williams as well. But Casey Hayward, a very talented second-year guy, is hurt. Probably not going to play on Sunday. How can the Giants attack this Packers secondary?
Well, you got to go down the middle of the field, John. They're giving up, I think it's 15 completions on 22 bombs down the middle of the field, which is a horrific number. And on top of that, those pass plays have averaged 20 yards per completion. So their safeties are really beatable.
That's Kevin Burnett and MD Jennings back there. They've actually considered making a change. We'll see who ends up starting at safety on Sunday. Giants and Packers, we talked about some of the X's and O's, but to break it down with game film is Carl Banks with the latest edition of Strategy.
Let's take a look at the Green Bay Packers' third down defense. Now, it's very important when you read blitz, and Green Bay has a lot of guys in the box here. So the key, number one, is getting it picked up. And then second is proper execution with wide receiver and quarterback. When you get a blitz picked up, it's very important that the receiver runs the right route and the quarterback throws the ball on timing. Here the quarterback throws a late ball, it's intercepted. Run it back again. I'll slow it down. The blitz is picked up. There's the blitz. Receiver runs an outside route to the sideline. Quarterback throws the ball slightly inside, and it gets picked off. So the key is crisp route running and proper execution between quarterback and wide receiver. Another component of the Green Bay Packers, when they're not blitzing, they will challenge you man for man up front. They have some big guys up front who can really rush the passer here. Let's just take a look. They have enough guys to pick them up. You got 6 guys to pick up 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's see what happens here. And it just comes down. You can't be outworked when you're protecting the quarterback. You just get outworked. Quarterback pocket awareness. Can't run into a sack. But you can see here, let me slow it down. Look at these two guys in particular. They push the pocket. They just keep working and working until they get to the quarterback. All right, now on offense, you have to be aware because the Green Bay Packers passing game is all about timing. So you'll see a lot of directional and diagonal routes. And the key is do not leave the open window. When I talk about a window, if you're in pass coverage, you can't vacate a window once a guy goes by you. Understanding if you've got two receivers, 1-2, outside of you, there's a good chance that both of those guys could be coming to the same area. Let's take here, we call this a diagonal double slant. There's your diagonal here. There's one slant, two slants. Got to get in the window there. So it's key for the second-level defenders, the linebackers and defensive backs. If your responsibility is to get out and cover that window, don't vacate it when a guy pulls you the other way. And here, Eddie Lacy is a very good running back, but he can also catch the football. Here he is showing good speed and power in the open field. So when you have him in man coverage, you've got to get him right away. They turn him loose. And he just runs with the football after he catches it. Very competent runner as well as a receiver. There you have it.
And Eddie Lacy will certainly be a big challenge for the Giants on Sunday. Since he's come back from that concussion, he's led all NFL runners in rushing, Paul. And boy, the Packers used to be a pass-first offense, not anymore.
No, they can actually afford to run the ball because of him. He's got the power to run between the tackles. He's also got speed. Again, he's run had a 50-plus yard run this year, which shows you that he can get to the second level and the third level. Interestingly enough, though, John, he's only run for 4 touchdowns, which is rather surprising for a guy who's got well over 650 yards on the season.
No doubt about it. The Giants' defense should be up for the challenge. Every single part of that defense has played well, and defensive coordinator Perry Fuel is very impressed.
we're playing better together as a unit, and that, you know, hey, we're complementing each other. Secondary's complementing the front, and the front's complementing the secondary. And that's what we wanted to have happen, you know, with our defense, is that they complement each other, because we have to work together in order to make the thing work.
And, Paul, it all starts with stopping the run. That allows the secondary to keep two safeties deep, and everything works. But, boy, that front seven, especially since John Beeson has gotten here, has been rock solid up front.
You know, John, it's funny. When Beeson came here, nobody truly knew what to expect. And now we've been talking about him every single week since he started in the middle linebacker spot 4 weeks ago.
Well, how could you know? He was benched for Chase Blackford in Carolina.
28 tackles since he's gotten into this lineup. And it's not just the tackles that he makes, but it's the way he controls this defense, helps guys line up. Even the defensive linemen are telling me they feel so much better with him calling the shots behind them in the middle linebacker spot. It's elevated everybody's confidence. I think part of the reason is he is so assertive. He's very vocal, very assertive, very confident himself. And between him and Roll, they really kind of send a very confident atmosphere through the entire defense. And these guys are feeding off of it.
Two of the team's defensive leaders, along with Justin Tuck, who decided to play Mel Kiper a little bit this week. He was very impressed with where the Packers got Eddie Lacy in the draft.
Yeah, they got a steal. Lacy is a powerful back that, you know, makes all the right reads, it seems like. And, you know, even when it's not a very impressive run, you still got second and five, second and four. He always falls forward, and he's a very strong back, man. He reminds me of kind of a bigger Marshawn Lynch. So, you know, it's gonna be tough, especially with Aaron being, you know, out. They're probably going to try to feature him a little more and keep the down and distance in their favor, so you don't put a lot of pressure on an inexperienced quarterback. And, you know, that's going to be a huge challenge for us.
And, Paul, we talked about it. Everything begins and ends with Eddie Lacy, with Rodgers being out with that injury. And he's big. He's downhill. He breaks tackles. Fourth in the NFL in yards after contact. I wonder if the Giants might have someone have to bring an eighth guy into the box just to slow him down.
Well, a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, Keith Rivers had an outstanding game last weekend against the Oakland Raiders. I believe it was eight tackles and a sack. Played by far the best he's played since he came to the Giants. He is part of that run-stopping package as well. So I think you may see a little more of him on the field than maybe you would anticipate otherwise, because he can match up with Lacy. The other thing that I want you to keep in mind, John, is that if the Giants are able to get a lead, that will probably force the Packers to get away from Lacy a little earlier than they might want to. I don't think they want to get away from him at all.
Why would you?
They're going to want to give him the ball 30 times. But if the Giants can get a lead, I think they're going to force the Packers to try to put the ball in the hands of the quarterback, and that plays into the Giants' hands.
And the Packers also have a banged-up offensive line.
No question. From the center to right tackle spot, they may have three different guys shuffling in the lineup on Sunday, and that bodes well for the Giants, too.
As impressive as the defense has been, Paul, how much do you credit it to the fact that they're playing well, or does it a lot to do with the competition? Not very good quarterback play the last 3 weeks for Giants opponents.
You're looking at the fourth straight subpar quarterback on Sunday in Green Bay. I understand that, but you know what? In this league, you don't take a W for granted. You still got to go out there and play. You know, ask any of the teams who have been upset over the course of the season and say, hey, were you playing a team that you should have beaten? And they'll probably tell you yes when they got upset. So you just got to win.
And you mentioned Scott Tolzien, and he'll be under center for the Packers, and the Giants will be ready. Not a lot of game tape on him this year, but from what John Beeson has seen, he likes him pretty well.
You look at the numbers, he threw for almost 300 yards, so you know he's capable. You know, a lot of times as a third-string guy, you don't anticipate that you're going to play. And sure enough, you know, second-string guy, Cynical gets hurt, he has to go out, and he was prepared. And for the most part, he did a good job, so you would expect him to play better the next week knowing that he is a starter.
All right, Paul. What does Tolzien do well for the Packers? This is from @Koss85 on Twitter.
Well, he understands the playbook. He can run the plays very effectively. He can keep the offense under control. He can throw the checkdowns, and he can throw the screens. Everything else, not so much.
Paul, a must-win game for the Giants and a must-win game for the Green Bay Packers. Thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Great to see you, John.
And that game comes your way at 4:25 in MetLife Stadium on Sunday. The Giants trying to pull to within one game of first place in the NFC East with a game home against the Cowboys only a week away. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for tuning in to Big Blue Hits Friday, fueled by HessOnGiants.com. We'll see you next time.